Blog Talk Radio.
Against, having only three fights under his belt, but
I took care of him, and that same guy is on this card. The guy he beat, I don't know if he's Christian's on it too, but it would make sense if he is. Let me just check the list here.
Rich, I just realized something.
What was that?
This is probably on Mo's show in 2009.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, because figure next Thursday is Christmas Eve, where I'll be at my aunt's house drinking heavily and drinking the Santa Claus and scaring as many children as possible. And then the following weekend is Thursday's New Year's Eve, where I'll be at some bar drinking heavily and probably sticking my tongue in some random girl here.
Well, there you go. We got 2 weeks off then, huh?
Yeah, I guess. That's kind of a good thing, too. Usually around this time of the year, I mean, a lot of the fight cards really, will close up for the year, for lack of a better term. I know HBO just had its last card of the year this past weekend, which I'll go in depth in a few minutes. And there's a real small pay-per-view card this weekend with Kelly Pavlik. Against Miguel Espino from the first year of the contender, who nobody seems to remember. And then that's really it for boxing this year.
Right.
And then, like I said, I don't know really what the world of mixed martial arts has got going.
Well, there was just a huge card this past weekend. BJ Penn came through on my prediction and won his fight. Very handily, beat the crap out of Diego Sanchez, gave him a freaking cut like you wouldn't believe, cut that's probably never even seen in boxing. I mean, his whole forehead was split open. It was bad. He broke his brain through the freaking hole.
I didn't see it. I'm glad you reminded me, because I do want to look that up. Just,
man, it was bad.
Now, obviously, the sport has evolved where fights get stopped, a lot faster than they did back in the day. I mean, there's no way that Rocky Marciano, with his nose split in half, would be allowed to go another 20 seconds, much less two rounds in today's sport. Probably the worst cut I've ever seen recently was a fight about 7 or 8 years ago. It was an Arturo Gatti fight. And he was fighting in Montreal, which was his hometown. And he was cut by a headbutt, but they wasn't a punch. And if they would have stopped it, it would have been a TKO for the other guy. And it was the first round that happened. And the referee there, like, yeah, so that's something, it needs to replay in situations like this. Because, I mean, this cut was wicked. And now it's like, you really can't stop this fight because, Gotti would lose. And he went 10 rounds with it. I mean, it literally looked like if you have your mouth open, that's what the gaping hole looked like above his left eye.
Yeah, it was bad with the BJ's fight, too.
That article that I did, when you did those pictures for, when you did that kind of like a slideshow.
Yep.
Like your body's yesterday. The one picture on there is a picture from that fight with his eye, just literally hanging his head.
Yikes. Well, Diego lived through it. He's going to have to retool his aim if he wants to come back for that belt. It's going to take him a while. But Kenny Florian was also on the card, did really well. He just totally demolished his opponent, and you would be surprised, Tony, at his boxing. I mean, he was a straight-up boxer. No knees, no elbows, really. He's just straight-up boxing in there. And he was even fainting and bobbing and weaving. You would have liked watching him. I'll have to get you the video so you can see for yourself. But, I mean, I was just making that point a few weeks ago, or even last week, I think I mentioned it, that MMA guys just can't box, it seems. Well, Kenny Florian's proven wrong.
Well, I mean, and people ask me, they ask me, a lot of times, if I ever get into the boxing versus mixed martial arts debate, which one I prefer, and I always tell boxing, and I tell them, like, I enjoy the stand-up game, and people ask me, well, why do you think, a lot of mixed martial artists aren't as good in the boxing field? So, well, a lot of it comes with, their discipline of training. As a shoot fighter who, specializes in getting low and taking out your leg, obviously he's not going to be much of a puncher because of the way he has his body position. But another thing is, like, you have to defend it. Like, we were talking last week, there's so many things to defend. So you got to defend against, you know, knees, you got to defend against, you know, someone going in to take out your legs. You got to, you know, defend against your elbows and, like, you know, all these types of arm bars, there's different shit like that, that it's hard to really concentrate on your punches.
Yeah, but, it's just unfortunate that, that's one of the things that people are slacking off on, because it's just so essential to the game. I mean, pretty much, you know, the crowd loves it too. That's the thing. Like, people shouldn't obviously fight just for the crowd, but, you know, you want to be an exciting fighter to move up the ranks. You want to be the kind of guy that people want to see have the title. So it's important to be an exciting fighter. You know, you don't want to you don't want to be a guy who just, you know, jabs everybody all the time like Klitschko. Even though, you know, he's still the champion, you can't change that. A lot of people just sit there and, you know, throw pot shots at him in the press.
A lot of people say, like, it's
boring.
It's going to fight. They're like, no, it's going to be exciting because he has a killer instinct. And he's going to come after you and try to knock you out. But Vladimir, as you were saying, you know, he's not an exciting fighter. But there are other fighters that are very good fighters. The guy like Klitschko is very talented. But the problem is, with his running and not sitting on his punches, and that's another reason. And he just won this past weekend, Paulie Malignaggi. So he's not a very popular fighter because of his style.
Right.
So, I mean, what can you say? The guy doesn't, you know, produce, but at least he has. So he has almost like the villainous charisma. A lot of people hate him because he trash talks and this and that. But yeah, like some people that are just so bland that they're a perfect example. John Ruiz. John is a nice guy from all accounts, but he has a boring style and a boring personality. At least a guy like Floyd Mayweather, who sometimes is not all that exciting, at least he's got a personality and, you know, so it's like Hector Camacho, probably the boringest fighter of all time, I hate him. But he's got a personality, so fights just because you wanted to see someone deposit his head in the 10th row.
Yeah,
so to be a big money maker, you need one of at least two things. You need to have like a tremendously exciting style. Like a guy like Mickey Ward was not, you know, much like a personality demon, you know. He was more of like, you know, quiet, reserved guy, just went and did his job. But he gave you a hell of a fight, so people would pay to see Mickey Ward. So a guy like Muhammad Ali was a great fighter. You know, he wasn't always the most exciting, but he had a personality you wanted to see. Sugar Ray Leonard had a combination of both. He was a fantastic fighter, very exciting, but he had, obviously, a magnetic personality. People loved him. You know? But then you have these people like, you know, the John Ruiz and the Corey Spinks that they don't have an exciting fight personality. I think Yuri Foreman's going to be the same way. Not an exciting fighter to watch. Very bland as a personality. It's like, well, why are we
going to
watch this?
Yeah. Malignaggi, speaking of, just basically showed the judges in the boxing world what should have happened the first time.
Exactly.
Complete replay.
I only saw part of it when I had gotten back work that day. But I only saw part of it. But he came out there, he did his job, and, you know, he was rewarded properly this time.
Right.
I mean, Rich, as a person that has been, you know, blatantly robbed in a fight, all those other people, like, whenever something happens, people will ask me, because I guess they think I'm, like, an expert, a rain man, I don't know. But people will say to me, like, the last time when he lost that fight back in August, what did you think about the way he conducted himself in the ring, you know, saying it was bullshit and, you know, he's pissed off? I said, I have no problem with him saying any of that. Well, don't you think he sounded like a sore loser? I'm like, no, because he shouldn't have been the person that lost the fight.
Right.
And I said, and for being in that ring, if you busted your ass so hard going into the fight knowing you were at a disadvantage or getting screwed in that fight, going in there and then fighting above and beyond it, not that your ass aren't going to get kicked over.
Yeah, it just goes to show you, you know, when you have it a second time, and it's, you know, in front of more same judges, and, you know, it's a done deal. It was obviously the same score that should have happened the first time in the end, and it shows the whole boxing world, and it shows the fans that, you know, this is how far back, you know, that this whole thing, for both of these guys, you know, they were not able to go on with their careers to the point they had to do it over for the same result to happen and this just different score, you know, which is unfortunate. But, you know, you had to have all that hoopla over a bullshit
decision. I think Rogers' management didn't want to do it. You know, they were like, wait, if you want to fight, you know, what's the problem? And it was like, yeah, but it's like, you know, bullshit. No, it wasn't bullshit. I remember, they were asking Bob Arum after Patagua had Lopez, I mean, they was battering him in the 10th, 12th round, and almost the back before they were going to stop the fight, and Lopez went to the decision because he won, like, 7 of the first 8 rounds, and they went to Arum to fight, like, do you think you see a rematch? No, we won the fight.
Yeah.
Well, why should we give him a rematch in the gym? Because you were getting your ass kicked at the end, you still got a lot to prove. Tell me enough to prove, we dominated, it's like, you did. So, let's just say that when the management, everyone's nice with Fighter, like, you know, Fighter will just say, you know what, I didn't deserve that fight for a time, but I got the season, I didn't think I should have gotten it. I turned around and said, you know what, you want to do it again, we'll do it again. Because I want to prove to myself that I was the better fighter. I don't like winning like that, and I don't think any real fighter likes that. But the management, they're just going to go, shit, man, if I could use a meal ticket here, and I could, you know, get $1 million to fight this guy, why would I want to accept $500,000, you know, and then risk my boy getting knocked off? Because he shouldn't have got in the first place.
Yeah.
Well, let me just say, there was five fights on this weekend on network cable TV. The two fight card on Showtime, I didn't see the first fight. That was Victor Simeon. He scored a knockout win. The second fight was very entertaining between Timothy Bradley, undefeated champion, and he went up against undefeated Lamont Peterson. Good fight. Bradley was just a little bit better. Won a clear decision. Then they had a triple header on HBO with the aforementioned Paulin and Malignaggi decision over Juan Diaz in the rematch. And then, we had a Vitaly Klitschko. He fought over Sweet, defeating Kevin Kingpin Johnson by unanimous decision. Mr. Johnson was slick, you know, didn't take a whole lot of risks, didn't give Klitschko a whole lot of openings, and Klitschko just pretty much, you know, pounded over him, but wasn't, you know, overly fantastic, but won the decision. And then the first fight was Vicious Victor Ortiz with a stoppage win on cuts against Antonio Diaz.
So there was two Diaz fighting this weekend.
Diaz. I don't think they're related, you know. This Antonio Diaz, I'm trying to remember who he was related to. I don't think he was related to Juan Baby Ball. This Diaz is from Mexico, and Juan Diaz is from Houston.
Right.
Well, speaking of Houston, we got a root for the Houston Texans this weekend. Because they're my pick in my last name standing pool.
I'll be sure to start Matt Schaub this weekend.
Yes.
He's my quarterback on one of my teams.
I've got St. Louis' devastating defense that only gave up 47 points last week.
Well, I had Brett Favre on the same team as him, my fantasy team, last week, and I picked Brett Favre instead of him, and I was kicking myself. Favre had a really bad game. And he's just on TV right now. He's on a commercial on Versus.
Oh, really?
That's odd.
I'm watching my piece of shit hockey.
Wow.
Hey, what do you want to do January 1st? You want to go to the Winter Classic?
The Winter Classic? Oh, that's the game at Fenway?
Yeah. Good chance to keep back some rings. The Flyers were playing like shit. Then again, they beat Boston in Boston last week.
I forgot about that.
Well, no, I already know the Flyers might be turning around, and they turn around and lost 6-1 the next game.
What be a good game to go to.
Yeah. The Flyers throw with the big boxing fan, Ray Emery, he's out for 6 weeks. I don't know what the hell he did.
That sucks.
Yeah, it does suck. It sucks a lot. This weekend's paper two fight with Kelly Pavlik and Rich, we talked about it last week. It's weird because he's originally supposed to fight Paul Williams in June because I was going to take a few of my friends down to Atlantic City to see him. And then he sort of pulled out the injury to his hand. So then they were going to postpone it to October, and it got postponed again. November got postponed again. Then they were going to have December 5th. Got postponed again. That's when they threw off Sergio Martinez, and they were actually turned out to be a good fight. And then they were going to strip Pavlik of his title. Now, from all the reports I've been reading, they were saying how this injury with the staph infection was very serious. Pavlik actually, at one point, was in the hospital with like a 104-degree fever or something, and there was a chance, it couldn't become a life-threatening situation if the fever didn't get under control. Then with the staph infection, he could have lost his hand. I don't know how much of this is being trumped up by his promoters or how much of it is, 100% factual. But the fact of the matter is, he's fighting this weekend against Miguel Spino, and Miguel Spino was in the first year of the contender. He was kind of like the faceless guy that nobody remembers. He lost to Peter Manfredo after Manfredo got brought back from the one guy's like illness or chickenpox, whatever he had. They brought Manfredo back. Manfredo beat him in the first round. So we never saw Spino again. And now he's fighting the ghost from Youngstown in Youngstown, and it should be a fight. It depends on, Pavlik has a fought in 10 months. A lot of it's really just going to depend on, if he's rusty, if he's concerned about his hand, if he's 100%, and what his mentality is. He's only had one fight that, school he got from Bernard Hopkins, and he won, but he wasn't overly impressive. And, we'll see what he does with Miguel Spino.
We shall see.
Yeah.
Well, before we get too far, I wanted to mention there is a fight over in Poland this weekend. It's pretty interesting. Paweł Kołodziejczyk, 23-0, is fighting Rob Calloway, 70-10, 57 knockouts.
Rob Calloway, I've seen him a number of times.
This is for the International Boxing Council Cruiserweight title. It's a main event. Actually, it's tomorrow night. It's not Saturday.
Bob's one of those guys, he always can't fight anybody. Some he wins, some he loses some. But he's always there.
And some Polish guys, but different venue. Over in the United Kingdom, it's Bethel Green and York Hall. We have a heavyweight fight between Paulo Vidoz, 26-6 with 15 knockouts, versus Albert Saldanowski, 44-2 with 27 knockouts. That's for the vacant EBU heavyweight title. That might be interesting. Not really a whole lot of well-put-together cards, other than a couple main events here. There's a good one going down in Chiapas, Mexico, between the featherweights Cristobal Cruz, 39-11 with one draw, 23 knockouts, and Ricardo Castillo, 38-7 with 25 knockouts. And that's for the IBF featherweight title. And that should be a good one. I know that there's the Cage Effects event we're going to have Linda on to talk about in a little bit here. Also, there's another event, the Main Street. They seem to have their shows on the same night as UFC, all these other shows, and still sell out, so they're doing something right. But there's also a Strikeforce event on the same night. Our former guest, Kung Lee, will be in the main event. Scott Smith.
Yeah, I did read about that. Because someone was talking about it the other week. Well, I'm doing this part-time job right now. I'm, working this Christmas tree lot. You guys are all, big-time mixed martial arts fans. I mean, that was just to the point of insane. Everybody wears all the hats and all this shit. I'm like, all right, guys, let's relax down here. So the one that I talk on the show, they asked me the names of guys that I've interviewed. So I'm like, Joe Lozon, and my friend Mike, that's my favorite fighter. And then they're doing Ken Shamrock, and I mentioned the one guy that's up there, Kung Lee. I'm like, yeah, we interviewed him. He didn't say much.
Yeah.
I said, big country, we interviewed him. You guys are there all about it. You guys are yours and death. I'm like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like Kung Lee got that part in the movie. Because remember, he told us he was going to he's gonna fight again pretty soon if he didn't get the part in the movie. So I was kind of shocked to find out when I finally watched Pandora, he doesn't have like a word in English in the whole freaking movie. It's supposed to be some Japanese guy. So that was kind of funny. Did you mention St. Peter is fighting again this weekend on the Kelly Cabot card?
What was it?
Samuel Peter. He's fighting an 8-rounder heavyweight fight with Gabe Brown, who's 18-12 with 4 draws, 12 knockouts, and his record.
Well, can you get that old box track real quick?
Yeah.
Click on Gabe Brown and tell me what his weight was for his last fight.
269.
269? Okay. Okay, then it's not the same guy. I always get it confused. There was a heavyweight named Gabe Brown and a heavyweight named Galen Brown.
Yeah.
And one of them, I remember, used to be huge.
Galen Brown, I think, is the one you're thinking of. He's the better one, I don't know. This guy's not too good. He's lost to Dominic Quinn, Bruce Seldon, Lenroy Thomas, and Skyler Anderson in his last 4 fights. Then he had a draw before that. Then he lost 2 fights to the same guy, Aaron Lyons, before that. Then he had 2 draws before that. This guy can't get a break.
I've seen Aaron Lyons fight.
Oh, my God. His last win was against a guy named Salvador Farnetti, who is 327 pounds.
You know what's so funny? Because I saw a picture of that fight. I forget if he had it on or not. It was in a boxing magazine. It's a straight ring magazine. I forget what. It's like, what year was that?
That was 2005.
Okay. I remember that they had a picture of that fight, and there was like, just like, these guys were huge in there. It was in the camera clip. And you're like, oh my God, look at this. It was like this. I forget exactly what they said, but they were like, apparently, like, sumo wrestling or something ridiculous like that. But yeah, I do remember that. And I was like, and look at the size of these two.
Also, it's a pretty interesting card down in Venezuela. Edwin Valero at lightweight, 25-0 with 25 knockouts. Fighting Hector Velazquez, 51-13 with 35 knockouts and 2 draws. That's for the WBC lightweight title. I didn't know there was anybody out there with all knockouts like that.
Yeah, I remember his last fight, I forget where it was, but Valero was part of the guy, Antonio Pelu, I think his name was. And he was a highly accomplished fighter, and Valero blew him out in 2 rounds. And that really impressed me. Because a lot of people were saying, well, how is his record been padded? And then he turned around, and I was like, no, he blew out this really accomplished fighter in 2 rounds. Rich, I remember we were talking recently, and in fact, I even asked John Scully about this when we had him on last year. And that one fighter at Philadelphia, Tyrone Bronson, who had built his record up and he had like stone in his crew up like 18 or 19 consecutive first round knockouts. And it got to the point where like he knew that like, everybody knew that they were putting him in there with like tomato cans so he could get this record. And I asked Scully, I said, would you do this show with one of your fighters? He said, no, because after a while, you want to get these guys hidden a little bit to get a little bit of adversity. Yeah, granted, you get all the big press with the 18 first round knockouts. But even Tyson, early in his career, had a couple fights where he went 3, 4, 5, sometimes 6 rounds. And it's going to stunt his growth more than anything. And his first fight that he went more than 1 round ended up being a 6 round draw. And then last week on Showbox, he was, I don't remember the name of the guy he was fighting, but the guy got him into the second, third round and threw some punches back at him. Next thing you know, fight's over. and he went down, and he got up, and the guy just pulled it way all the way on him until he stopped the foot. He didn't know how to react. He's been so used to guys just falling over at his feet after one or two punches that he didn't know what to do, and he had a guy fighting back against him.
Yeah. Well, that's how it goes. Before we get Linda on the phone here in a few minutes, I do want to go back and revisit the UFC 107 card and just go through everything again real quick. And then after the call with Linda, we'll talk about the other upcoming MMA fights this weekend. There's a bunch going on tonight, actually. We probably should mention those first. And if you have a chance to catch them, you might want to get out there now.
Cool.
Obviously, the show will be on 11, so it'll be way too late, but there's actually, it says UFC, but that's not really the real UFC. There's a UFC event on tonight, but it's Universal Fight Combat. And that's it. They get away with it because it's in Rio de Janeiro. there's also a King of the Cage event tonight in Highland, California, and a Coliseum MMA Combat event in Brazil, as well as another event in Brazil, the Challenge Championship in Recife, Pernambuco, Brazil. And also Fight for Hope is the King of the Cage event, and that's in San Manuel Casino, Highland, California. That's it for tonight. We'll talk about the rest of it later. But the UFC card, UFC 107, obviously the main event, it ended by knockout. The technical knockout, the ref waved it off. We talked about briefly about that cut at the beginning of the show that ended it. But he had a pretty mean cut on his lip throughout almost the whole fight. And, you know, he looked pretty badly against PJ there. There really wasn't many highlights for him. He, you know, was at his normal intensity and couldn't really pick anything out that he did horribly wrong. But BJ is that much better. And we had Frank Mir fighting Czech Congo. And Czech has really been disappointing in the fights I've seen him in. I think I mentioned this last week. He's just not very entertaining. He's a big dude, very muscular. You know, he would have real good elbows if he used them, knees, but it doesn't seem like he really uses his advantage as well. And he fought Frank Mir, who was looking for, you know, a real comeback fight, and he put on a lot of weight. You know, muscle weight and bulk just for this fight, and obviously for the go-around again with Brock Lesnar. And now that it looks like Brock is going to be out for a while, Frank took care of Czech Congo pretty quickly. It was 112 in the first round. He hit him with a couple quick punches and then took him down and got him in a guillotine choke. It was kind of a modified one, but it worked. And he was holding on to it so freaking tight. I mean, he used every bit of that new muscle he put on to hold it on. And, man, it seemed like he barely had it, but he pulled it off. And he's going to be fighting Shane Carwin now in place of Brock Lesnar for the interim title. So it looks like Brock is going to be out for a very long while. And I doubt he'll be done forever, but it's going to be close, I think. John Fitch won a pretty boring unanimous decision versus Mike Pierce. It was one of those fights I really didn't watch much of. We talked about Kenny winning earlier. We didn't really talk about how. He fought Clay Guida, and he won by submission, actually. The rear naked choke he loves to throw on people. He got on Clay after he beat the ever-living hell out of Clay Guida, who is another guy who usually comes in pretty intense. And he tried, but it just Kenny's boxing was just out of this world for this fight. He looked very conditioned. And he credited his new boxing coach for helping him out. Clay actually had a pretty decent cut and was bleeding everywhere, even though it was behind his hair, so it wasn't really affecting his vision too much. It was, you know, getting everywhere, all over the mat and everything. Crazy fight. And one of the sleeper fights of the night, unfortunately, it didn't come out with the right decision. Guy Stefan Struve, I talked about him last week. He got cut in his first fight in Germany for the UFC. I didn't realize he's 23-3-0, but he's got a lot of experience. Obviously, he's a heavyweight at 238, and he's 6'11". They call him the skyscraper. And he came out, and, you know, if you expected him to beat up this short, fat guy named Paul Buontello, he's only 6'2". Not really short by most standards, but short compared to Stefan, and his record was 25-11. He'd been in the Elite XC, and surprisingly, he got beat up pretty good in his first round. Buentello got taken down. He was getting wrapped up in all these kind of leg locks and holds by Stefan, but Stefan couldn't take him out in the second round. It was one of the best second rounds I've ever seen in MMA. Buentello just was throwing bombs and just looking for that desperation shot. And Struve came in with one of those flying knees, you know, like I talked about that guy, Jose Aldo, why I'll never join MMA. Well, he came in as a tall guy with one of those. And Buentello just split the uprights. And as he was coming in with it, he hit him in the face with a straight right and just totally stopped the guy in his tracks, in the air. And he just stopped in the air and hit his back just instantly. And it was an unbelievable punch. And it was amazing that he was able to actually weather the storm after that and make it through the round. And then he won by majority decision. But, you know, the UFC has had so many different controversies lately with decisions, and this event would be no exception, because even Stefan Struve himself after the fight said this fight should have been a draw, and I'm not very happy with my performance. So when the guy who wins tells you it should have been a draw, you know there's something wrong. One judge actually had it as a draw, and he won by majority decision, because he was, you know, another guy had it as the other guys had it as a win for him, but one guy had it as a tie. So one guy was thinking right. I thought it could have been a tie. Alan Belcher versus Wilson Gouveia. Belcher won by technical knockout in the first round. Matt Wyman versus Shane Nelson. Wyman won by unanimous decision. Johnny Hendricks won by unanimous decision over Ricardo Funch. Paul Harris beat Linares by submission. Johnson beat Garcia by submission, and TJ Grant won by TKO at 157 of the first round over Kevin Burns. That's it. So, now we can give Linda a call and have her tell us about this CageFX event in Mansfield, Mass. This weekend. See what else she can tell us. I know that that last show, I didn't end up going to it, unfortunately, even though we had the guest on the show, and we, probably should have been there. I should have been there. But, you know, it was just one of those nights. It was real rainy. Nobody wanted to go out anywhere. I couldn't get a ride out there. But from what I heard of Linda, she was actually on Scott Casper's show, speaking of another guest we just had on. Scott Casper had her on the wrestling show. So I listened to that, and I guess the last show in Plymouth was sold out, even in the rain. It was like unbelievable crowd. So this one in Mansfield is probably going to be the same deal. Let's just add get her on the phone. So with us, Tony, be quiet. In a coma over there?
I'm not in a coma. Job interview tomorrow.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that other job, they can put me on delay, so I've got to do it for a few videos later. I don't think they're going to be willing to offer what I'm asking. So, yeah, I'm already doing it, and they're like, I don't give a shit.
Uh-huh.
It's entertaining. Maybe I'll wear my business plug at Christmas time.
Uh-huh. I'm just trying to get this shut up here. Give me a minute.
Sure. Hello.
Linda, how's it going?
Hi, Rich. How are you?
Good. We're on here with Tony the Tornado, and I want to touch base with you about this weekend's show. Sounds like it's going to be a really good one.
Hi, Tony the Tornado.
How you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right down here in Philadelphia.
How's the weather over there?
Well, not too bad. A little chilly tonight. I was hoping it's nice this weekend because I have to work outside all weekend.
Oh, geez. I'm hoping it's nice here, too.
Yeah, I was just saying that I heard you on the Scott Casper show. It's just the Takedown Radio guy there. There's a host of Takedown Radio on our show a few weeks ago, so it's kind of funny that he sent us that clip talking about your promotion here. So.
Oh, small world, isn't it?
Yeah.
Very small world. Scott's a good guy.
Yeah, he knows a lot of people, too. The night we talked to him, he actually had a phone call from Mo LaWall. Well, it was just in the news today. He's added to the latest Strike Force card, so it was kind of interesting.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Yeah, he's pretty well known from what I know of him as well. He's a pretty cool guy. I really like him.
Yeah, he seemed like he got a lot out of you, too, in a short amount of time. It was like a 15-minute clip, but he asked all the right questions and got you to go into depth about, I heard the last show was really good. I didn't end up getting to go. I couldn't get a ride at the last minute, but... I regretted it as soon as I listened to that show because he talked all about, got it all out of you about how great a show it was. And Christian Moorcraft obviously surprised a lot of people, beating Josh Diefen.
Yeah, wow. It was so random too, Rich, the way just the whole show went. Because, you never know what to expect. People think, wow, they planned it out, they know what they're getting. Nobody knows what you're getting. You have no idea until the day of, and in the midst of when everything's going on. So to have that type of a turnout, and then to have Christian Moorcraft beat Josh Diefman, wow, everybody was stunned.
Yeah, I can imagine. Now, I noticed that Diefman's on this upcoming card. Is there a reason Moorcraft didn't get put on, or is he just not on the list?
You know, I don't know. That's a good question. I think that, Christian Moorcraft is fighting Lee Bean, I believe, February 20th.
Okay.
So I think this is just the in-between stage for him.
Well, tell us a little bit about some of the other big fights on this card this weekend.
We have Josh Watson and Mark Griffin, light heavyweights, and one strange is that everyone's rooting right now for Josh Watson. But yet, his record is like 2-3, and Mark Griffin is 5-1.
Right.
So, I mean, it's really strange where people, they focus their concentration. So I think Mark Griffin is pretty understated.
Yeah, sometimes records don't prove anything,
I think you're right. I don't think they prove anything on, who would have thought? There we go, Josh Diefman again. And Christian Moorcraft. Christian Moorcraft was
3-0, and he fought two guys, the same guy, right?
He fought Eric Foley
twice,
and won twice against Eric Foley.
And Jakeman was like 8-2 or something.
He was actually he was 10-2.
10-2, yeah. There you go.
10-2, and his two losses were by submission. And what's so strange is that Eric Foley, the guy that lost to Christian Moorcraft, actually fought Mike Mulligan and lost, and that was his retiring fight on November 14th. And Mike Mulligan retired on November 14th, so we had two heavyweight guys retire on our fight card.
Wow. Pretty interesting. And what's the overall... feeling about the promotion now? You've had a few shows under your belt, and you're hitting into, what is this, the seventh show that you're doing now?
Number seven. Lucky
seven. So what's been the best moment so far, you think?
What's the best what?
What's been the best moment so far, would you say?
You know what, Rich? That's a really good question, and I'm not even prepared to answer it because I can't even tell you one particular thing that's the best moment. It's an entire combination of things that go with it, and, there's so much to do that go into these shows, and I know we focus so much on the fighters, and we promote the fighters so much that we don't even realize how much we do to put these shows on. It's incredible how human beings can hold this much together. some of, you know, some of these shows are like planning 500 person weddings times 10. And it takes people a year to plan a wedding. You know, so we pull these shows off with 5,000 or more people in, you know, 4 weeks.
Yeah.
Sometimes I can't even believe it's done, and I know that the fighters bring it to our attention all the time, saying, I can't believe that you guys are doing all of this, and they see the show, but at the same time, they see us between shows as well. And they make comments like, why are you so calm? How come you aren't running around? Why are you crazy? You know, it's really interesting to hear the sponsors when they call and you're able to talk to them the day before a show and actually answer their question and understand where they're coming from and have them bring to your attention that you sound really calm.
Yeah,
it's interesting.
It's just it's amazing how even on the nights that UFC is going on and this weekend there's Strikeforce going on, you're able to do stuff like that. That shows a lot about the organization and the professional level and ability to market, obviously, in the local area. Obviously, anybody who loves MMA would rather see it live than on TV, but the UFC is so popular, it's tough to believe you can still sell out on night that the UFC is going on. But you guys did. Doing something right.
Thank you, Rich.
Yeah.
I think we're doing something right.
And is anybody that you've seen fight in your show so far, looking like they might end up in the UFC? Is anybody really stand out as somebody that you'd like to see get up to that level?
I think, honestly, I would like to see Lee Dean move right up the ladder. I'd like to see Josh Deaton move right up the ladder. And I don't know if him fighting Christian Moorcraft is that tough of a fight after not fighting for an entire year and being out of a shoulder injury was that fight for him. I mean, I don't, and I'm not qualified to match these belts up, but just watching it, it seemed as if Christian Moorcraft and Josh Deaton were both super prepared. And I saw them both prior to their fight a number of different times. I watched them train. They were both, you know, hardcore strikers and, you know, both training extremely, you know, difficult hours and just going at it. Then you see them go into the cage, and it's almost as if Josh Deaton had a really tough fight for his first fight back after a year. So I think he looks like he's ready, and, you know, Josh is like a freight train.
Yeah, he's a big guy.
Oh, he is such a big dude, but Christian Moorcraft is a big guy, too. He only has a size 15 foot.
Wow.
I know. I go and say that he shops at Marshall's in the clown aisle. He could say that. And he's like 6 foot six or something and, you know, 255 pounds. He is a big boy.
That sounds like it.
And he's young. He's really young. He's like in his mid-20s, instead of 25 or something. He's very young and very strong. He seems as though he's extremely committed. Plus, he's such a gentleman. Listening to him talk is, you know, almost listening to somebody that grew up in a military camp.
Right.
Because he's so polite. He's just a really, really good person. Yeah. You wouldn't think he could look at him and you're like, whoa, he's a big guy.
Right.
Then you get, there's a couple other guys that I really think are super talented. And watching them fight and come around, I know that Steve Dunn is really talented. He's come a long way. He's making his pro debut this Saturday at the Hemplex. And watching him, he's 44 years old. How far are they going to allow him to go?
Right.
I mean, he's very talented, but they're not necessarily going to allow him just because of his age. It doesn't matter. You know, he has the health of a 25-year-old. I don't care about that. He's in impeccable shape. He takes his training very serious. And he lives the lifestyle of a
trained fighter 7 days a week. He doesn't slack off. But does the UFC ever take guys like that serious because of the age?
Well, sometimes they do. I mean, you know, obviously Randy has proven himself, but Randy Couture is over 40, so if they're going to take a guy in like that, even though he's obviously got a more impressive resume, they do want to, you know, take somebody that's, you know, getting up there in their 30s. Of course, it's all about, you know, what their skill level is.
You think so?
Oh, definitely. Then Dana White made fun of Herschel Walker. He's probably the oldest guy in MMA now. He hasn't had his first fight yet, but he was really only doing that because it's a rival organization. Tony, are you going to say something?
I said 47 years old, baby.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
I've had Herschel back in 1992, and he was a physical specimen then. I mean, he's trying to get in the Olympics for bobsledding, and you know, I remember reading or hearing about his daily workout routine. They're saying he's doing like 1,000 push-ups a day, 2,000 sit-ups a day, you know, running with weights attached to his back. I mean, the guy was a physical specimen when he was in the NFL. And, I mean, even though he's been out of the league now for, you know, a good 13, 14 years, I mean, he's the type of guy that's one of the guys that's compulsively in shape. Kind of reminds me of a guy like Bernard Hopkins, who after he supposedly retired from boxing, in the gym the next day, apologizing for taking his day off. That kind of reminds me of Herschel Walker.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's, there's another guy who was supposed to fight on the Brockton card that you have, who's like 45, isn't it? I remember he was real pissed because he didn't get to fight.
Are you talking about, it's either Brian Conrad or Greg Mendez?
Greg Mendez, yeah. He looks great for his age, too. I mean, he is cut, in shape.
He is in fantastic shape.
I couldn't believe it when I found out how old he was. He looks like he's like 20.
Yeah, he does look very, very young for his age. And, you know, he also weighs in at 145, so he's a smaller primed fighter. And when those fighters that are smaller framed, they cut weight, they look almost like statues.
Right.
Because they're just so cut up. And he's in fantastic shape anyway.
Now, has he fought again since then for you guys?
He did. He just fought on November 14th, and he won.
Oh, cool. But he's not retiring anytime soon, right?
No, I don't even hear threats of it, so I doubt it. Sometimes you hear a fighter say, yeah, I'm going to fight this one fight card, and then I'm thinking about retiring. You don't even hear that from him.
Right.
And believe me, I hear a lot of stuff. Which I don't know how, but everything comes across my plate.
Yeah, well, you know, you're not only the promoter and, you know, overseer of all this stuff, but you're also the motherly figure in all this, so of course you're going to get all these guys, you know, coming to you with all their problems, right?
Yeah, I might be the motherhead. I can't remember the phrase that Steve Dunn just said on one of the radio interviews that he did. He called me something, and I can't remember what it was, but it was really funny. It was sort of in a funny way, and he said that it was much easier talking to me than anyone else. He said, you could talk to her about anything. And it was really cute the way he said it because, you know, he's a grown man, and he's another one that was Street Fighter gone, and at MMA takes his training very seriously. A lot of people fear him, and here he is talking sweet, and they don't realize what a gentleman he actually really is.
Oh, yeah, that's very common with fighters, you know. Because, you know, people don't realize that just because you can be violent for sport doesn't mean that you're violent all the time. You know, it's like one of those things that just people just expect you to be like that all the time. Like tonight I was watching Jeopardy, and, you know, they get the guy who plays a detective on Law & Order on the show,
right,
on Special Victims, and they're asking him if he takes it home in his personal life. He's only playing a detective.
Yeah.
But even they're even asking.
Job.
Yeah. but you know, you're just completely, you don't have to be, just because you do fight doesn't mean, you know, you're going to be walking up to people on the street looking for a fight all the time. Some people are like that, of course. You know, there are people that fit the stereotype, but I've met a lot of people who are fighters and talked to a lot of fighters who you'd never know it from talking to them, but you know, you see the fight, obviously you're going to be scared.
Of course. Some of these guys, you know, they're heavy hitters, and I personally like the watching the big guys stand up and battle.
Yeah,
and a lot of these people don't put these big heavyweight fighters on their fight card, but people like to see them stand up and battle.
Right. Oh, we were just talking about that earlier. A lot of fighters don't think about it. They don't intentionally mix it into their game sometimes, but you have to be entertaining. I mean, it's got to be part of your fight game if you want to move up the ranks. That's what people want to see. They want to see. And, you know, I've been noticing that the boxing in MMA, and especially at the amateur level, like in your show at Brockton, when Sean Baker fought, and the whole town of Brockton is standing up waiting for this fight, and he's trying to throw punches, and he couldn't throw punches. He gassed out, you know.
Right. And, well, at one point, I heard them saying that, and I actually saw this, where he fought a kid named Jared Menslage, mm-hmm. and Jerry actually put his hands down, and I heard one of the commentators say that he said, "Hit me harder." I personally hear the fighter say that, but you could see it,
yeah.
And you could see where Jared actually put his hands down, and Sean Baker just unloaded on him, and then he just gassed out.
Yeah, you know, and like a little boxing training will help you.
Right.
You know, and guys are learning that late, you know, and it's kind of unbelievable because, to me, you know, boxing has always been the core part of MMA, you know, with jiu-jitsu and wrestling. Obviously, you know, those are the big three. So to see guys neglect their boxing, even at the professional level, I mean, look at guys like Kimbo and Houston Alexander there after their fight. They were sitting there both. It was so funny. They both went to put their hands on their knees after their fight. And, you know, it baffles my mind to think these guys, you know, get to the point, even at heavyweight, you know, the guys that are real muscular at heavyweight, like Brendan Schaub versus Roy Nelson, like that fight.
Right.
You know, Roy Nelson looked like the better boxer in that fight.
You know what's interesting is I saw, I was right behind the officials for Kimbo Slice's fight just this past a week and a half, December 5th.
Uh-huh.
And I was so close to it, I could have thrown a spitball at Kimbo's life. Although, we'll talk about the spitball later. That happened later on in rain. And I have pictures to prove it. I was a spitball queen. And when Kimbo's life had come out, they had gone almost the entire first round and didn't even touch each other. It was the most boring fight I've ever seen. And it was more disappointing than it was boring.
Oh, yeah.
Because I expected these guys to come out and actually be, even, I mean, I saw you touch gloves, so now you have to kind of bang with each other or do something. They almost look like two little schoolgirls rolling around on a merry-go-round. It was just so disappointing. And I sat there on the edge of my seat just waiting for one of them to hit each other. And meanwhile, I ended up getting a ton of good pictures because of it, because they really didn't move. It was like they were two little statues. And it's awful because being big guys, you know, I expected more out of them just being from a standpoint and sitting in the stands and being a fan of both of them.
Right.
But when I saw them at the weigh-in the night before, I was so impressed. The two of them had these abs that looked like they were chiseled out of stone.
Yeah.
For big guys, it's very difficult to do. I mean, that's a lot of discipline right there. And what was Kimbo Slice's opponent's name?
Houston Alexander?
Yes. I keep forgetting his name. I want to call him, like, Jerry or something. When he first came up.
He's one of the only guys I saw live in person at a UFC fight in UFC 77. And he had a few wins strung together at that point, and he was looking really good, and he got knocked out in the first round. And he's never really been the same since, so I kind of... I think I saw the fight that really changed the course of his career, unfortunately.
Oh, that stinks.
He definitely tried. I mean, he tried to implement a game plan that might have worked against Kimbo, but it was, just was not entertaining. And, you know, he forgot about that aspect, especially for him. People really wanted, you know, to see that that in his game. You know, he would obviously have to come out against Kimbo for him to win that fight, but he was just kind of too afraid to test his skills, I think, at that level. He figured he just, and it was kind of along the same lines, we've been kind of throwing jabs at Dana White because he's shitting on his own fighters. I mean, the Ultimate Fighter episode, he's talking trash about Roy Nelson before the guy even wins the show. And, you know, talking about
the same comment that he made about him saying he should
mobile up in America. Cheeseburgers
in the back or something.
Yeah, I mean, and I think Roy is actually a very good role model for the UFC. I mean, here's every fat beer drinking guy's role model. That's
Big Country came out, and when he came out, the crowd was like all over him.
Yeah.
They were all over him. I watched him walk out. I got a bunch of pictures of him, and even watching him walk out, his Big Country sideshow entourage, they weren't like looking like Big Country.
Yeah.
But yet, he came out, he did his thing, and, you know, went back to the country. But at the same time, you see all his fans in the audience, and it was pretty impressive. And I know the kid that fought him, too, had gone out, and he was convinced that he was going to take him.
Uh-huh.
I mean, as all fighters are, but this kid seemed like he was far more convinced. And I had come down a little later, so I'm in the lobby talking to my husband for a minute, and I didn't get to talk to him, but usually when I do talk to these fighters, even our fighters, I get a sense for where their head's at, and sometimes you can tell where they are, you know, mentally.
Right.
So I didn't get to talk to this kid, but I did, you know, see the country talking, and it seemed like he knew what he was doing.
And I don't know if he objected to it, but Kimbo on the show, obviously they let it out that he had a bad knee issue with the arthritis.
Right.
And there was one scene where he actually was telling the other people in the house that it was bad. But then to have Dana White go out and say the doctors just looked at him and, you know, he's got this, that, and the other thing, I think was just unclassy, you know, because
right.
Obviously it gave Houston Alexander a spot to go for, number one, and number two, it's like Dana's trying to make it impossible for Kimbo to go anywhere else but the UFC, because he wouldn't have signed a contract until after the Ultimate Fighter, because that was the deal. So I just thought that was crazy.
You know, they obviously, Rich, they don't air, and Tony, I'm sorry, I keep forgetting about you. You don't make much noise.
Okay.
Maybe you should make a little bit more noise. one of the things that I noticed that they had in our queue is that Kimbo was sitting in the ice bath.
Right.
Remember, he lasted about 3 seconds in there.
Yeah.
But they aired this, and this was obviously after, but to say in one sense that he got a knee injury, and then he had arthritis in his knee, and then for them to air it later that he was cleared to fight.
Right.
Like, what sense is that? Is he injured or is he not?
Well, arthritis is a catchy thing. It's touch and go. So I would imagine that. I would imagine that's not a disqualifying injury, you know, because you can take medication for it. Whereas, you know, if you have a real injury with like a tear or a break or something, it's more than just taking pain medication. You know, you just can't fight with it.
Right. You know, Lee Bean is out on a knee injury, which is why he didn't fight the November 14th show. If it were up to Lee Bean would fight with, you know, one arm or one leg hanging off of his body. But clearly, for his future, it's not the most intelligent move.
Right.
And when we told him that we wouldn't clear him until we heard what his doctor had to say, and he merely pulled a muscle in his knee, nothing major. But because it might be unsafe, it wasn't even confirmed, it might be unsafe for him to fight. He couldn't fight. Lee was so upset that he has the fighter mentality. Granted, yes, he works a regular job and he has a family. He's had a real life that he has to focus on. He has no choice. He's not like a single guy living alone that he's his only responsibility. And these fighters that have these lives with a family or a wife, and it's a little bit more difficult for them to focus on their training. But with him, it's just the opposite. He sees it as, I have to fight. The mentality of, I am a fighter. He was so bummed out that he could not fight. I mean, he was really upset. He said, I can still fight. I know I can. And Gary finally made the educated decision and said, it's unsafe for the future. You fight now. Yes, you may take a win. Maybe you take a loss. But if it's smart for your future, what's going to happen in the future? You're going to injure your knee more and never fight again? And he was really upset. But unfortunately for Lee, we had to make the smart decision for him because he couldn't do it for himself. Because he just sees it as he saved fight. And understandable. I mean, Lee Beaton's a great fighter. And he's very entertaining to the crowd. He's a great grounded pound guy. A lot of people will fear him. As you know, you've seen him fight.
Oh, yeah.
And he put his signature weight outside the cage.
Yeah, I know. I remember that you told me that he was working on that, and I saw it live at the Brockton show. How did that heavyweight tournament turn out? Is that still ongoing? Or is
Lee Bean won the belt.
So he is the official belt holder, huh? Kind of like Brock Lesnar, he's the interim title
That's
holder.
That's right. That's right. Christian Moorcraft will be fighting Lee Bean on February 20th at the Jungle Plex in Portland for the heavyweight belt. So Lee Bean will be defending his heavyweight belt.
All right. And are you guys going to have other type of tournament stuff like that, or is this just an experiment to start off the whole thing?
I think so. I'm not really, when it comes to the tournament stuff, I'm not really in the loop with that because I know that the tournament style from Brockton to Mansfield, the first Mansfield show, kind of changed up a little bit where, you know, there were a couple of fighter injuries and then everything is subject to change when it comes to a fighter. So by the time we get from one event to the other, it seemed like the opponents had dwindled down to, instead of it started out with 8, it ended up being 6. So by changing them up like that, we fought for the belt and became the champion on September 12th. So I'm looking at it as, okay, he's going to defend the belt in February, and then we also hold in our possession a welterweight belt. So somebody has got to eventually win this welterweight belt. Right now, it's in my possession. And I can't do anything with it. I already have my own pink belt. I didn't earn it, so I have one.
There you go.
I've got a question for you guys, both of you. This question just got posed to me online. I spend a lot of my time, you know, with on box rack and always on fight forums. Even when we're talking on here, just to bring up other topics in this question. And here we got I had to answer this just because I thought it was so funny. A lot of people, especially younger guys and girls, that really get into, you know, the new wave stuff. And even though, I mean, he got exposed last year, and really did a media sensation, Kimbo, people still buy into his hype. And someone, and I hope they weren't serious, had the audacity to ask if Kimbo fought Muhammad Ali, and I assume he's going to apply Muhammad Ali in a boxing match, who wins?
Obviously, Muhammad Ali, he's got the ring.
You know what? It's interesting because sometimes in rich, you know this too. Because you wrote a beautiful article about it, the misconceptions of mixed martial arts. Everybody has to understand that boxing is merely an element and a piece of the eclectic style that mixed martial arts brings to the table. It's just merely a piece of it. It's just a fraction of what they put into it. And it's so funny how many people bring up the boxing, want to see MMA fighters fight boxers. I love it.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, I'm rich and I talk about this every week. Because I'm a traditional boxing guy. I've been involved in boxing for 16 years now, almost. And as a fighter, I almost fought Rich the Amateur. That's how I met him. As a coach, as an official, both a referee and a judge, I think, even as a ring announcer, the only thing I haven't done in the field of boxing is I've never been a ringside physician, and I don't think I'll ever be that.
I thought you were
going to
say, Tony, thank God, I thought you were
going to
say ring side girl.
I've never been a ring girl, but I actually, when we have an amateur show one time, I was the guy in charge of hiring the ring girls. And for the first part of the show, I was, assisting them getting them out of the ring. Then for the main part of the show, then I was playing to have somebody else take over. But I've never done that shit. I'm working with now, we're big mixed martial arts fans, and When I tell them, like, some of the people that I interview on here, I mean, they get all impressed. And they always ask me, what would happen if this person fought this person? I said, well, it depends on the rules of the fight. Well, what happens if, I know it might take some fight to kick off. I said, well, I don't care what kind of fight that would be, because I think Mike Tyson would beat him anyway, because of his speed and his overall ability. And I think he knows, a little bit overhyped, media sensation. They're all saying, well, serious question, okay, Mike Tyson and Brock Lesnar. I said, okay, that's a good question. And I said, well, it depends on the rules of the fight. In a standard boxing match, Mike Tyson wins. Because if stand-up, some of these guys are good strikers.
Well, Mike Tyson broke a guy's arm in a street fight, though, you have to remember.
Well, Mike Tyson beat a guy's arm, though.
That was just that. They're clearly not playing by the rules. No matter how you like that, you did not play by the rules. So for Mike Tyson, rules don't matter, Tony.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, no, I'll switch to that. Evander Holyfield. I'll put Evander Holyfield in there. You put Evander Holyfield in there in a boxing match against Gully, say Brock Lesnar or somebody like that. Holyfield's going to have the advantage because it's stand-up. Now, Rich and I were talking before we had you up here tonight, and the one thing I said was, like, people always say, about boxing, and sometimes, straight guys are honest, good strikers as a pure boxer. I said, well, of course. I said, because one thing, if they have to train in other styles, and you said it's just a small element, and they have to defend against other things. So you have to defend against, guys going for your knees. You have to defend against guys throwing kicks at your head. A lot of times you get guys that don't sit down on their punches as much because they have their front leg up a little bit as an offensive / defensive move.
Right.
Put Evander Holyfield in there against Brock Lesnar in a boxing match, Evander Holyfield, because he knows that sport. He knows how to strike much better. He's got the footwork down. He's going to, outmaneuver. He's going to knock out a guy that can most plays. He's going to, most likely beat a guy like Brock Lesnar. Now you reverse the field and then you put it in more of a martial arts. That puts Holyfield at a disadvantage because he's never had to defend. Now this guy's, you get your boxing. He's 50 years old. That's almost 4 years in the ring.
Wow.
Yeah. If you're a man, Holyfield's about 46, 47 years old now, and I read his biography where he started, he went to his first gym at the age of 8. So you figure that's 4 decades of, standard regular boxing. You've never had to defend against a kick. You've never had to defend against an elbow. I mean, he did have to defend against a earbud, but he wasn't supposed to.
That's
what people ask me all the time. I say, I have one guy that I'm working with. It's the first time I met him. And he's only been training 2 months in a type of martial art. I don't remember what it's called. So now he feels like he's an alpha dog here because he's getting some confidence in himself. And he's like, I want to spar with you sometime. I said, well, if you're going to spar with me, it's going to just be in the boxing because I don't do anything else. Yeah, but I want to throw elbows and this and that. I said, well, you're not going to get me in there because that's not my time. I said, all right, I'll make a deal with you. We do one for one. You fight me in a boxing match, and then I'll take you on. You got one of your elbows and chokes? I'm like, I don't train for that. I don't do that. I said, now I can street fight you. And I get a little nasty in there because I grew up on the streets. But I like the sport of boxing. To me, I like the scientific part of it. I watch the fight that everybody in the world says is boring, and I find exciting things about it only because I see things that nobody else can see.
Right, you see from a different point of view. That makes sense.
Yeah. And, I mean, there are times I go watch a fight and see. And then I'll turn to my dad. My dad's a big fight fan. He's funny, you know. He fights comes and shit with me all the time. He's jumped out my corner and stuff. And as I'll turn to him, we'll watch our fight. I'm like, see, fuck, is Shane Mosley right there? And Chad, like, start throwing overhand right. Boom. Because he knows that. I'm like, I can just see the way he was dropping his left and positioning his right. I saw the other way right was coming. And he just kind of laughs at me. And we were talking about when we had the fight last month between Pacquiao and Cotto. And, you know, I did a prediction on it. And I was almost literally to the round with being right. And I said, I could just see it, the way it was going to happen. If I found out I've been wrong, I'm human. Of course, the thing I just love to see. And I put all the statistics in my little computer up here and see what it kicks out. I love it.
And actually, Linda, I think you talked to one of my friends from high school who wants to try to settle the boxing versus MMA debate with me, a guy named James Swim. I think we're going to nickname him Swimbo.
You know what? I did have a very lengthy conversation. Him and I go way back now.
Yeah.
We had a long conversation. That's funny.
Yeah, I fought him in high school. I forget the circumstances on how it came about, but somebody wanted me to fight him, so we went across the street to the YMCA and put on my gloves that I brought from home. And we actually had mismatched gloves. One was like a bag glove, and the other was an actual boxing glove. And I hit him with the left hook. I did the Mike Tyson's punch up, jump up, because he's much taller than me, a real tall guy. And he told me when he recontacted me on Facebook recently, he said, "My head still hurts from when we fought in July." But now he wants revenge, and even though he's training MMA, he wants to fight in a boxing match. He wants to do some sparring, but it's been tough to pin him down. We were supposed to do it this week.
He's in Mass.
Right. He's in Mass now, so it's just a matter of, you know, getting him out there to the gym out here in Brockton, and we'll hopefully get it on tape this time.
are you in Brockton?
Yeah, I'm right next door in Abington.
Oh, you're really close. I think he actually, you know, it was random. He just called me randomly out of the blue and ended up getting me on the phone, and him and I had a lengthy conversation. Like, he was explaining that he was here from Florida, and it was his midway. He was stopping by on his way to, I think he was moving out to L.A. or to Las Vegas, one of the two, and he mentioned that he was coming to the November 14th show, but I never actually got an opportunity to meet him face-to-face, so I'm not sure if he showed up or he got to see the show.
No, I don't think he did, because I remember talking to him around the same time. He was trying to get a ride to go with me, and I couldn't get a ride, so
Rich, all you have to do is reach out and call someone. There's so many people on their way down to the show that can, you know, get you on board.
Really? Yeah, I'll keep that
in mind. Oh, yeah. Especially where, you know, right in the Abington area, I mean, there's a lot of people.
Yeah.
There's a lot. I mean, I have a lot of fighters from Bridgewater, Brockton, that, you know, they drive down by themselves. Might as well hitch a ride.
Yeah, I could get a fighter interview for the website at the same time.
Right. I know. You should always reach out to me, because I could probably hook it up.
Alright. Well, I'll let you know if I need something this weekend. I might have something lined up, but we all know how things work out in the end sometimes.
Absolutely.
Especially with bad weather.
That was a funny story that I got to a job this year in Brockton.
Oh, yeah. The guys you know, too. The Rocky Marciano Foundation people there.
Yeah.
Tony was coming up here to Boston for, he wanted to give his father a nice birthday present and take him to a Red Sox game. So he came up here, and we actually got to see one of the best games I've ever seen at Fenway Park. It was almost a no-hitter.
It was a perfect game. It was a perfect game. It was 7 innings.
Yeah. So, and of course, we never shut up. We were both talking to each other the whole time. We barely saw most of the action.
Right.
I think I actually had to see the scoring runs on ESPN later. I saw a couple hits, but it was a low-scoring game from what I remember.
Yeah, it was like 6-1 or something.
Yeah, it was a good game, though. And so he came up here, and he wanted to wear a Rocky Marciano shirt for the whole thing, because we were going to do a little intro to the radio show there at Fenway. So he called on the Rocky Marciano Foundation. He found him on a web search, and then we were supposed to have the guy who grew up in Rocky Marciano's house on the show first, and we ended up with the guy who knew Rocky Marciano, and Hank Tattaglia over there, Italian. And we ended up getting Hank, but Hank only stayed on the phone for about 5 minutes, and then he went back to bartending.
I'm from the Philadelphia area, and we're going up to Boston. I'm not a big Red Sox fan, but my dad always wanted to see Fenway. My uncle always wanted to see Fenway, so I was giving the trip to my dad as a Christmas gift last year, and my cousin gave it to her father for his 60th birthday. So we're coming up, and so I'm like, I don't know what to wear. I'm like, I really don't want to wear any Red Sox gear. I'm not really a big fan. I'm like, I definitely don't want to wear any Phillies gear up there, because I know how rich and all those Boston nuts are up there. So I said, boy, I'd love to find a good Rocky Marciano t-shirt. And I went online, I was into a Google search, and I did Rocky Marciano t-shirt, and this beautiful black shirt comes up with him knocking out Jersey Joe Walcott. And I said, that's the shirt I want. And I'm like, boy, but it's like, this is within like 5 days. I'm like, well, I don't know if I'm going to get this in time. So I saw a phone number, I placed a phone call, and the guy answers that with,
Christmas presents? I don't know.
Yeah. this is why you're going to have to attend the show, because I am giving out a ton of Christmas presents.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, definitely.
Santa's visiting.
Yeah, that was one of the things he wanted to, there's a picture of Rocky with a Santa Claus hat on. And he's dressed up as Santa for some Italian-American club back in the day, and he's got a kid on his lap whispering in his ear. Great picture. And Dennis wanted to put it on a stocking, so he went out and got like 100 stockings. And I spent like 6 hours putting together this really nice flyer on, Christmas specials for all the Rocky Marciano Foundation gear. And of course, the stocking was the centerpiece, you know. And it's like 6 weeks later, and he doesn't even have one prototype made to take a picture of to put on eBay, you know.
Wow.
It would work with just the flyer, but, you know, without an actual product to sell for people to link to the flyer online, it's kind of useless, you know. Because then they'd have to call up and order the package, and, you know, it would just take way too much time. Be way more practical to have an eBay link, you know, so I keep telling him that. He keeps going right over his head. It's so funny listening to him trying to navigate the internet sometimes, you know, it just baffles him. But hopefully we can help him out.
I don't know if he's the only one it baffles. I'm finding that a lot less people are trying to figure out how to navigate their way around.
Right. Well, there's so much new technology to sort through. It gets confusing for a lot of people. I mean, you see a lot of people that they only use the web for some of the easiest things to do on there, like Facebook and MySpace and stuff that you can do from your cell phone. It seems like less and less people are using it from, you know, a desktop computer nowadays than are
right.
From other sources where you can only use limited parts of the internet. So, I don't know, it's definitely a field I'm glad I got into, because it's definitely the wave of the future. Newspapers and magazines, they're not definitely going to die anytime soon, but they are going to die. It's a matter of time.
Yeah, I was losing my luster.
Next time you talk to Dennis, I got a couple people I can put you in contact with, if he's interested in doing a few things. Like the guy in South Philly, the Italian market, who already told me he was interested in possibly selling some of the shirts at, his shop in South Philly. And I gave him Dennis' info. I don't know if they've ever been in touch, but I mean, I can give you his email. And then Dennis told me last year that, if you ever know of any Italian festivals or Italian clubs or anything in your area, let me know. Well, it happened to be a few weeks after I had talk to him about getting the shirt. You know, I go to a big Italian festival every year right outside of Philadelphia. And, I mean, obviously I've never had enough time to work on it last year, but I can, get a hold of the contact. And, I mean, they can order shirts from them to sell there. Because I wore it there last year, or my dad wore it, and everybody's going up to him saying, where'd you get that shirt? I want that shirt. And I said, well, I got it online. Go to
Rocky Marciano Foundation. One of the things I told him, I said, you know, you got to put the address of the website on the shirts.
Yeah.
You know, that's real big.
Okay.
That's one of the things that I didn't figure out until like a few months, if not maybe even a year into running Fight News Unlimited as a .com. You know, you have to brand the .com. You don't just brand the name of the site, because, you know, people like who don't know how to use the internet aren't going to know how to look for it. You know, they're only going to know how to type the address into the browser.
You're probably right, Rich.
Yeah. So many people don't do that. It's funny. Like, you know, obviously, you know, if you got a big name website that everybody knows the address to, like MySpace.com or Facebook.com, you know, you can call it Facebook or MySpace. But you know, a lot of people, they have these websites and they just think people are going to find them by the name. You know, it's got a catchy name, but the website's like, you know, foreign to everybody. But anyway, Linda, why not give us a little final thoughts? Anybody you want to give a shout out to? Or I know we've been talking your ear off here, not letting you get
not at all. Believe it or not, Rich, I'm already multitasking at the same time. I booked a radio interview tomorrow with Kenyon Glover. Him and I are going to do a movie scene together, and the movie is My Cousin Vinny, and I think I'm going to be Marissa Tomei.
Oh, nice.
The scene is going to be the biological clock scene. So that'll be kind of interesting because I can mimic Marissa Tomei to a T.
Yeah, that's actually one of my favorite movies, you know, with the lawsuits and everything in the background, what I do all the time. But, you know, it's a great movie on how anybody can really figure out, you know, how to be a good lawyer just by going by the evidence and asking the right questions. She was
right.
In that scene where she's talking about positive traction, you know, couldn't possibly really have left those tire marks. That's like, to me, that's as good as the truth speech. You know, you can't handle the truth in a few good men.
Absolutely. That's actually, her court scene was one of my favorite scenes, but they've decided they're going to take the biological clock scene. But I was more, the type of person that would talk about the positive rear end. That would be right up my alley.
Yeah, especially you don't think that women are really that into cars usually, and you have a woman who's not only into cars, but, you know, she keeps up on her appearance because usually it's one or the other. Yeah.
Right, exactly, because obviously you can't have both, right?
Well, she did in the movie, so it's possible.
I think it's going to be fun. That's tomorrow. They're up between 1 and 3. The show is like 2 hours long, but I can't imagine I'll be on for that amount of time. Only because I have to go set up the weigh-ins for the fighters tomorrow.
Oh, there you go.
Very important.
And where's that going to be?
We're going to do the weigh-ins at the Last Shot in Stoughton on Washington Street. So we're going to set them up. We broadcast live from KGFX.com starting at 5 o'clock. So anybody that can't see it can log right on and watch the weigh-ins live for free.
Awesome.
I mean, that's one of the things that people seem to really like now, is the fact that we broadcast the weigh-ins live. We're working on the site, but I think there's so much going on with 4 or 5 cameras, different angles, and to broadcast it live, it's just so loud.
Right. Well, there are companies that specialize in that. I don't know how reliable they are, but GoFightLive.tv is one of the local ones that has done a lot of stuff locally. I know that I've seen them in action at a fight in Dorchester. And they do a lot more boxing matches than MMA, but they're getting up there. They're doing a few MMA shows here and there. And, you know, they have pretty affordable rates. They're streaming online for like $5 a show for most of their events. And I've signed up for their affiliate program, and the only thing I'd say that is kind of questionable about them is I have no way to track my stats. So that's kind of they're going to have to kind of revamp that to get a lot more websites to be interested in selling their link, but that's just one company. It's like it seems like a lot of companies are doing that. And actually, Strikeforce this weekend is having something called Strikeforce All Access that they've done before, but now they're taking it to a new level online.
Right.
And I was just reading the press release that I put out online on my site today that they're actually going to have like 6 different cameras on a database that like users can interact with. Like you can just, you know, be like your own producer of the show and be like, oh, I want to look at this camera now. So that's exciting. I mean, if you can.
That's really exciting. I love the concept.
Yeah, and they also have like the cage cam and everything. The referee will be wearing a camera inside the cage. I'm interested to see how that works out. I mean, I'm not going to pay for it and find out, but I'm going to be watching for what people's reactions to it. That's the way of the future.
Well, you know they must have a huge IT crew over there just to make that happen.
And actually, now that I remember, I noticed there was somebody on your card that's with Team Link. Team Link is Gabriel Gonzaga's crew.
Yeah.
And one of those guys was doing the same thing. He was planning, I think it was Marco Alvan, the head of that team, was planning to do. And I think he went through with doing a website that's supposed to be tracking these fights. I don't know how far he got with it, but he had that in mind. At least about a year ago.
Well, they did some, and we were scheduled to start working with them at the Jungleplex, which was the June 20th show for us. It was Rumble in the Jungle 1, and it turned out, I mean, and I hate even saying the word coaxial cable because to me it doesn't make any sense, but I know that's some, the ended up using some coaxial cable, and the internet connection wasn't running strong enough from the street down to the building. So there was too many complications for us to pull it together. It was like 10 days out from the show.
Right.
And they said, oh, there's no way that the cable company or even their crew would be able to pull this together and pull it off. So we ended up doing it. But I have such a great video crew, and my staff is just so cool. They work together, and they help each other. They're very talented people, and I hate to give up that portion of it. I'm just not ready to.
Right. Well, yeah, anytime that you have to bring in an outside company, you're obviously going to have to deal with whatever they want to pay you for, you know, using your rights. And you have to, you know, give them free rein to sell your stuff, which is not usually a good idea if you own it yourself, you know, and you can sell your own DVDs. It's tough for these companies that are trying to make it big to make it work with some of these promotions. That's why they're doing a lot of smaller shows. But, you know, eventually there's going to be the technology, if it's not out there already, for you to do it all in-house. I mean, obviously you figured out how to do the weigh-ins there for free, but there's got to be a way to make it low-cost and practical for you to do it all yourself, with the, you know, just hook in somehow the videos to the internet and make people pay for it.
Oh, there's absolutely a way. It's not really that difficult, even... Even my IT crew, we have an in-house crew and an awesome video production crew, and they seem to all work together. They can, you know, dub them in and host them live. They're very good at that. I just think that even the organization of the fight alone, because it's so loud, I know when we did the weigh-in last time, my camera guy, everyone kept bumping into him, so it seemed like he had one too many glasses of wine. So people are getting a little dizzy watching the weigh-in live, but we've perfected that, and everything comes, I guess, with trials and tribulations.
Right.
And a little turbulence. No pun intended, but I think we've perfected that. We will make sure that people stay away from the camera guy, and people won't be walking by and walking into him and hopefully not even tripping him. So we're broadcasting those live.
Yeah, I did check out the weigh-in the last time, even though I didn't get to go to the fight. I was on there answering some questions for people. Somebody had asked what catch weight was. I filled somebody in on that in the chat. Yeah, kind of funny.
Really?
Yeah, I guess somebody obviously didn't make weight, so they must have mentioned catch weight.
Actually, I think there was two bouts that were set up as the catch weight, but I know that Justin Hammerstrom and Rigo Dominici, Justin Hammerstrom, did not make weight. So they were going in as a catch weight, and we had to have the attorney pull them aside, and, you know, they were discussing what their options were. So I think people were, like, really trying to follow that. It was something new. They didn't get to see it before. It is interesting to see these weigh-ins live and watch what happens behind the scenes. People are really into the reality part of it. That's why they love watching the fights.
Well, I got the experience of being part of a weigh-in down in Iowa way back when I first started with Fighters Unlimited. And they made me the honorary judge of the ring girl contest.
Which
great.
Is fun.
Yeah, and on top of all that, one of the they had a little talent contest, and they had one of the girls do like a striptease.
Really?
Like a stripper on the pole on the couch. Like, nice. Filled out the welcome mat for me. So I had spent the whole night before that interviewing fighters for the website that they were setting up. And that, ironically, that whole card was supposed to be one of the first streaming MMA fights that, you know, this guy was trying to start his big company off of his fight. And it was just a complete disaster, unfortunately, because they only had about 1,000 people in the house, and they had the Iowa Coliseum for Iowa State University. It was so depressing seeing that place not even a quarter filled. I mean, this is bad, but there were some great fights, and it was unfortunate because there were some awesome fights. What can you do?
That's interesting that, you know, it obviously goes back to, I mean, you want to go and see these interesting fights, and you see the fight cards, and you kind of get pumped for certain fighters that you haven't seen them in a while, or maybe you're just a fan of them. And when these fighters come out and the audience isn't packed, it's going to be so disappointing.
Yeah. Especially when you've got a stadium-sized environment there, and you've got a whole college to market to, and it's obviously somebody in marketing dropped the ball for them. You know, I did a little bit of marketing online, but, you know, even if I had done what I can do today, back then, I don't think I would have been able to get the people that they could have got through local marketing, just going to colleges and maybe giving away some free tickets, you know, getting the word out.
Oh my God.
Nobody even knew about the event. And it was beautiful weather. I just don't understand, but they lost $54,000 or something along those lines, something like that.
Wow. See, I think that most of these MMA productions around the globe do the exact same thing, Rich. They think, the big misconception, they think that advertising is the same as marketing, and they're so opposite.
Right.
There's such different components, and there's such different elements of the show. Also, the brand of it, the image that you project, the people that you're surrounding with, everything comes together in a whole unit.
Yeah. And
they don't understand it. It's baffling to me because I understand the marketing aspect and the advertising aspect, but it's got to be baffling to these people that haven't been exposed to it before.
And it does take a lot. I mean, I saw it firsthand at that show way back in, must be 2006, I want to say, or maybe in 2005 now that I think about it. And just how much went into that show, and I was just playing a little part of it, but we had to set up the entire website for this broadcast. This website's now completely gone. The guy turned out to be a scumbag. And, you know, I was starting to figure that out because I was dealing with this guy directly, you know, doing his work to set this thing up. And these guys were paying him. You know, he was paying me. I was his employee, and I was figuring out he was bad news. And these guys were paying him to come in and do the show and, you know, supposedly getting some money off the back end if it sold well online. And, you know, this guy was just very, very close to the vest, a very shady type of guy, and it even took me, like, a couple months afterwards to get my final payment from the guy. I had to sign, like, a confidentiality agreement that I wouldn't give any of his technology away. And, you know, he's just a real slick type. He had weird connections, you know? He had, like, this guy that he was going around with was, like, more of a bodyguard than a business partner. The guy was jacked, and he had, like, thousands of dollars worth of jewelry on each hand. Just,
wow.
Just a weird situation. And this was a little Asian guy that was running the company, and he wanted things done so specifically his way. Like, if one thing was, like, a little hair off on the website, he would flip his lid. And, just a weird situation. But, and then, you know, they figure it out about this guy as the event is going on. So that kind of unfolded in a funny way. You know, because we're all down there, you know, getting ready for the show, and they're taking me around town, doing a little last-minute promoting. And, you know, the whole discussion ended up on this one guy, you know, whether they could trust him or not. And, you know, this is like 3 days before the show. They're figuring out this guy's a scumbag. And I don't know if that guy alone was to blame for the whole thing. Obviously, it was more than one failure, but he didn't help.
I gotta tell you, Rich, it seriously sucks when someone has an attitude issue and they can't control their temper, especially when you're trying to run a business and work together as a team. It's horrible, and there are stressful moments throughout people's everyday lifestyles that, you know, they can blow their top all the time. The one place you can't is when you're trying to piece together a show, whether it be boxing, MMA, or even planning an event or a wedding. You can't blow your top. All you do is get everyone else in an uproar.
Oh, yeah.
That doesn't work.
Drama is contagious.
You're absolutely right. It's so contagious. We call it cancer because it's that intense. We're like, oh, my God, get rid of the cancer immediately because everybody will contract it.
Yeah.
We got to get rid of it. We can't have that. And I'm notorious for that. I'm like, okay, this is what we're going to do. Here's how we're going to handle this situation. We're going to pull together. We have 5 minutes to make a decision. And we're going to do it now. And it's really funny because trying to listen to 40 different people, I can understand how this guy could probably, you know, want to blow his top every minute. Because you have people pulling at you every second while you're in the public's eye. But but you just have to control yourself. It's really tough. There should be a training seminar for promoters and event planners to actually keep their cool.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's more to it, too. I mean, they actually had a boxing promoters conference a few years ago. I remember advertising that. I don't know if they still do it yearly, but I know that they do that for boxing. They ought to have it for MMA. And I know that Scott Casbro, speaking of him at the beginning of the show there, he and his buddy Chris Arnes, that helps him run the show down there, they started their own league, DX Fights or something like that. I don't know it offhand, but
yeah.
I put some releases out there and everything, and I'm sure that they watched and learned from their buddy down there, who was when I went down there to Iowa and did that show with those guys and helped them promote it with the website. I'm sure he learned from that whole debacle, and it made his organization that much better because he saw what didn't work first before he was actually getting into it himself. Because he announced that show, I remember there was a big question about whether he was going to do it because he had like a real bad cold and he sounded awful before the show, but, you know, he pulled it off. Somehow he got his voice back. But he definitely learned a lot from that debacle. And they actually sold off the organization. I never heard of what they did with it, if they did anything with it. And it died after that, so it was definitely a fatal thing. And if you don't get all your ducks in a row and you don't investigate every player who's involved and find out what they are before you have to find out the hard way, it could happen to anyone.
That's the most difficult, finding things out the hard way, and I guess learning things not to do first. I guess when you put yourself in a position and you don't think in a detailed manner, because I know that when some of these other people bring to my attention, why are you doing that? That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard, and they could be talking about anything. I think of it, well, it's the details of it. How could I not do it? That's my thinking, but their thinking may not be exactly the same. And my thinking, obviously, is nothing like theirs. But the detail aspect of things is from the experience of learning the hard way.
Well, you've obviously you've had your share of events and stuff like that that you've seen and watched, and you seem to have it figured out beforehand, so more power to you, and we wish you, continued luck, obviously, and I'll definitely make it to this show one way or another. If I have to call you last minute, I'll be there, and we'll have a report, multiple reports, probably. We'll go all out, so.
Listen, I'm not even opposed to having Sean Baker pick you up on his way down there. I'll call him myself. He actually lives in Abington.
Oh, cool.
I believe he was running the line in Abington and Brockton, and he checks in 4:30, but you'll get a full interview on the way there, plus Sean Baker is one of the most entertaining fighters I have ever met in my life.
Yeah, he seems like it. He came out with a lot of intensity, that one fight that I saw him in Brockton.
His cage performance is nothing compared to his personality.
Right.
His personality is so entertaining. He's one of those guys that's extremely funny but doesn't know it. He has like these things that come out of his mouth that I took many, many road trips with him going from Boston to New Hampshire when we did the show at the Milford Dome.
Right.
And I mean, for like 4 weeks, two or three times a week, this kid was in the car with me for an hour, hour and a half. My stomach hurt each way. I couldn't stop laughing. I mean, I had tears coming out of my eyes. He kept me laughing the entire time just from conversation. And I said, Sean, I don't even know how you do it. You don't need to be funny. He's just a very entertaining type of personality, and he's extremely animated even outside the cage. So he's a good interview, and he's a good guy to just hang out if you need an escape from reality just to laugh about nothing. He's your guy.
All right, well, I'll definitely let you know if I need the ride.
All right. Tony, thank you for... thank you, Rich.
Absolutely. Just don't eat it. see Rich up there, please keep him in line.
I'll try. I don't know if I can, but I'll try. I know this. I'll reserve him a really nice seat, and we'll treat him well at the show.
Okay.
I promise
we'll treat
not
him
to.
Like a rock star.
I promise not to walk into the ring and challenge Mike Varner like that guy at the Brush show.
Rich, I'm gonna have to tell you off air because we have a really nice surprise for the show that you won't want to miss.
Alright.
You will not want to miss this, and the video is going to be posted immediately after because this is just going to be something. It's going to take Cage Fighting Extreme to the final show of the year, and it's just going to make 2009 taboo, no pun intended.
Awesome. All right, well, we'll definitely bring it to the folks and fans that follow Fight News Unlimited, and we'll see you there. And great to have you on again. And talk to you about the organization and all things MMA and all things life. I mean, we've covered a lot of bases tonight, huh?
We did. So. Thank you guys for taking the time. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
You could have called anybody, but you guys chose to call me.
Oh, hell yeah. I mean, I was thinking about you all week. I was kind of feeling bad that I got a couple messages about the event, and I hadn't even put up anything until tonight. I had it starred in my star box. And since I read it, you know, and it became a red message, I forgot about it for a couple of days. So I finally got it up there tonight with a link to the interview, so hopefully we get some.
That's okay. I understand, and I won't hold it against you.
I don't know how many local people follow the site, but I know lately, you'll like to hear this, the last week and a half, for some reason, I don't know what I did, but I went from 50,000 hits a day on average on the site to 70, 80,000 almost hits a day.
Rich, I told you what you did on there.
What?
Put my picture on
there. Oh, yeah. Tony was saying, since I linked the radio show to a picture of us at Fenway, it's all the good looks are going to bring lots more lady listeners to our show.
Right, and there's nothing wrong with that. Tony, you might want to come up and visit the show because I hear from all of our male fans that we draw in the hottest females.
Well, the ring girls at the Brockton show were pretty hot, too.
Oh, yeah, those were my ranks.
They were very friendly as far as, you know, letting anybody and their brother take pictures with them. That was great of them. They were very, very giving of their beauty.
Yeah, they're really good. We have four girls. I have my three regulars for this one, and then I have one making a guest appearance. So we're making, we have four of them. They're all wearing little Santa outfits.
Cool.
They have these tiny little skirts, and then they have booty shorts underneath, so when they bend over, it says Boston Brahma on their bum. It's very, very cute. The girls are excited, and I have another one of the girls walking Santa out while Santa gives out the presents.
Awesome.
So it should be kind of fun. The girls are a good team. They work together and they're very welcoming to fans. It's what they're so good at.
Yeah. So all around, you thought of everything. So it's good to see.
Thank you, Rich.
The formula is working well, and I definitely miss it. It's been so long. It feels since that first show I went to in Brockton. So it's actually been a while. Since I've seen any show, because that's the last show I saw in MMA. So.
Are you serious?
It's the only action in town I've seen forever.
Rich, oh my goodness, I can't even believe that you missed the show November 14th because.
I wanted to go. I was planning on going, but just nobody wanted to go out in the rain that night. It felt like it was just like it killed everybody, which surprised me because I was like, you know, listening to that thing with Scott and you, and here you are saying that people were lining up in the rain. So. Wow, how come all those people wanted to go and none of my friends wanted to go?
I gotta be honest with you, there's no way that me personally, just being, you know, a human being and an MMA fan, would I have walked from Route 3 to the venue in the rain.
I know, that's bad, that's crazy.
There's no way I would ruin a pair of shoes like that.
There's fans, and then there's super fans, I guess.
It was outrageous. I mean, that show, when the video on... The video, I think, is ready, and it'll be at the venue or the lane tomorrow. So maybe I can post a clip of it prior to the show. I'll see if my IT guys can actually do that in a quick amount of time so you can see it, because the overall venue itself is just, it's beautiful. And you look around, you see all of these people and everyone's behaving themselves, and you're just like in a sigh of relief. But then you look and you're overwhelmed because you can't believe that there's that many people packed into a building like that. It's awesome. It's so exciting.
Yeah, I can't wait. I definitely like the atmosphere itself, and you know, it's obviously a big difference when you go to a show that has it together. I've been to some shows that you know, are all over the map. You never know what's going to happen, so definitely makes all the difference going to your shows.
Thank you.
We'll be there with bells on. How about that?
Nice. I'll see you there, Tony. Have a wonderful night, too.
So, there we have it. And we only have about 6 minutes, give or take. And I'm just going to quickly run through here some of the fights we have coming up this weekend, other than KHFX and Strike Force. We talked about the ones earlier that are happening tonight. We have a bunch going on tomorrow, four cards going on tomorrow. We have stuff all the way from Saipan to Kansas here. We have the Northern Mariana Islands and West Beach, Saipan. We have Trench Wars 11. Sounds like real war. Trench Wars, Redemption. That's tomorrow night. And then we have over in Ventura, California, Resurrection from NFA MMA. Also tomorrow night, WBFN, Wild Bills Fight Night 24 is going on in Duluth, Georgia. And Titan Fighting Championships 15 in Kansas City, Kansas. Then we have on Saturday, we have a bunch of events, WEC 45, Cerrone versus Ratcliffe. So technically the UFC is going on this weekend too. You know, it's the little side organization of the UFC. That's going to be held at Palms Casino Resort in Las Vegas. We also have Cage Impact 2009 by the Deep organization over there in Tokyo on Saturday. It's kind of weird, usually they have stuff on Sunday, so it's supposed to be a big event. They're having it on a Saturday. So as we mentioned, Strike Force Evolution is going on this weekend. And check the blog for the weigh-in information going on tomorrow night at the weigh-in. And then also there's some information about that Strike Force All Access that I was talking about. And also on the 19th, we have two other shows, PFL, Brazilian Fight League 5, in Curitiba, Paraná, Brazil. And then we have Ilha Combat, Arojo versus Zulzino. And also in Brazil, in Maranhão, Brazil. And then we have a couple shows on Sunday, three shows. SWAT 31 from ZST in Tokyo. WFC 9 Restart from, I don't even know how to pronounce this one, Ljubljana, Slovenia. And then also on Sunday, Vision Fight 1 from Roraima, Brazil. Sounds like there's a whole bunch of stuff going on in Brazil.
That's
a popular place,
what you say.
I guess so. They really like their MMA down
there, man. Yes.
It's the most I've seen in one country that size in a long time for MMA. Of course, that's where Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu came from, so it makes sense. Anyway, that's all I have. We have final thoughts there.
Any final thoughts on the show? I just want to wish everybody a happy and safe holiday season, or, you know, best for the rest of 2009, and a happy and healthy 2010. And so, like you said, Tim, we'll be back with you in a few weeks, and we'll be covering a lot of stuff and kicking ass again.
Definitely. And it's going to be a new year by the time we get back on here, so I encourage everybody to think out their New Year's resolutions and try to make them happen. Last year, one of my resolutions was to quit smoking cigarettes, and it worked. I've been smoke-free and training for boxing all year long, and I could barely even tell I ever smoked. I'm disgusted by secondhand smoke now. That's how far I've
come.
So, it can be done, folks. Just keep that in mind, and we'll talk next year.
All right. Sounds good, Jay.
All right.
It was, but